Rise and shine, Cuse Nation. Welcome to the Upstate Orange Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube. I'm Jim Sinacropi. I'll be joined by the professor, Brad Conner, from inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. It's Sunday, January 10th, 2016, and second straight episode talking about two losses, this time both in the Dome. The latest yesterday is Boeheim returned to the sideline. We'll talk all about it, have some Orange trivia later in the show. We're going to go about 40 minutes tonight, or this morning, I should say. The Upstate Orange Podcast is brought to you by Generations Bank, with locations in Auburn, Farmington, Geneva, Phelps, Seneca Falls, Union Springs, and Waterloo. Be sure to check out their mobile banking app or visit them online at mygenbank.com. So happy to welcome the professor, Brad Conner, into the show live via telephone in Cincinnati, Ohio. He might be a little groggy this morning. He was at the Bengals game last night. Crazy finish, huh, Brad?
Yeah, didn't put a very happy morning for Cincinnati, Ohio this morning. And then I watched the Syracuse game early morning, so it was a double whammy for me, unfortunately. Last 24 hours, not very good.
Yeah, just so you think the professor would be coming into the show cold, not the case. He did get up early, watched the North Carolina game. Of course, a pair of losses for you. The Bengals lose another playoff game and haven't won one in 25 years. And then we watch what was a great game in the Dome, got great atmosphere, Boeheim's back. But for the fourth consecutive game, just a late second-half collapse by Syracuse. So we'll talk all about it. Here, let's get it started now with the big five topics of the show. And Boeheim's back. The question is, can he right the ship? I mean, we are so far outside on the other side of the bubble right now, Brad. It was great seeing him back on the sideline. The team seemed to respond. There was a lot of different gameplay elements involved, but at the end of the game, the players just couldn't deliver. Do you think Boeheim can get this team into the NCAA tournament from this point forward, Brad?
I think they're going to have a real difficult time at this point. I mean, I think at this point in the season, starting 0-4 in conference, you have a couple of out-of-conference losses, one really bad out-of-conference loss to St. John, so I don't think they've even won a game since they beat Syracuse. It's almost as if this team has to reestablish their goals for the season. And I don't even know if one of those – I think one of those goals is to make the NCAA tournament, as it always should be.
Right.
But, you know, they're 0-4 in the league right now with, you know, 14 games left. They've got to do some significant damage just to be 500 in this league. I mean, that's a tall order. And can 6-10 get into this tournament if you're in the ACC? I don't know. I would find it hard to believe. I think they play with a different energy with Boeheim behind the bench or on the bench. And I think that's important, but they're still limited. They got no better between when Boeheim sat out and when he got back last night. They're not a better basketball team. They may make different decisions during the course of the game. They may come with a little bit different energy, but they have the same talent limitations. They have the same size limitations. They have the same point guard limitations. I don't know how much difference he can truly make, with this, especially with the types of games coming up. You know, you're seeing Duke, you're seeing Virginia, you're seeing Carolina again, you're seeing Pitt again, you're seeing Louisville. I mean, I don't see a team that can beat those teams right now.
Yeah, and you see some bright spots, but then you see some regressions. The bench hasn't been developed. Tyler Lydon played pretty good against North Carolina, but his offense has kind of disappeared. Michael Binajay went from being a Wooden Award candidate to, you know, not even being the third best player on the team, you know, making just terrible mistakes. The late turnovers last night by Binajay were just sickening. And, I don't know if this team has the personnel for Boeheim to work that kind of magic, but I will say that seeing Boeheim on the bench, one of the things that were different is he teared into a couple guys last night. You didn't see Hopkins do that. So for whatever that's worth, you know, we always kind of lament how Jim Boeheim handles the players sometimes, but it's been a winning formula for him. and seeing him back on the bench, you know, laying into Malachi Richardson after he missed a defensive assignment, even though Richardson was having such a great game, it definitely, you know, it was a contrast to the way Hopkins handled his personnel. So, you know, another guy last night, Brad, that came, looked, you know, he had his most minutes of the year was D.C., Dwan Coleman. He had, let's see here, it's North Carolina. He played 27 minutes, 5 points, 7 rebounds. My thing with Coleman is that, yeah, he's a big body, so we're probably going to have to give him these types of minutes. And he got some nice rebounds. He had some moments. But, you know, when you see a guy who's been on the Hill now for 4 years get the ball in the paint and take a wasted, unnecessary dribble, that's the type of thing that his coach at Jamesville, DeWitt, would have been upset about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a weird thing with him. I mean, he was a skilled offensive player in high school, I imagine, and certainly it was kind of a man against boys situation when he was in high school, I'm sure. But as a five-star prospect who Kentucky was going after, you would think that the ceiling for him would have been a lot higher then. The injuries have hurt him, but he seems healthy now. He would seem to have the same mobility now that he should have had coming in. You know, if not, then close, but he's certainly in better shape now than when he came in. So I don't know what's holding him back offensively, other than just maybe rust still. But I was curious, and there was a couple things that floated to my mind when I was thinking about Dewan Coleman coming back last night and playing last night as many minutes as he did with Boeheim back on the bench. That I don't know if Boeheim was on the bench earlier, if he would have been in those games for longer, and because he wasn't allowed to talk to Hopkins, Hopkins was doing what he could to sort of follow the script. If the script was you take Dewan Coleman out at the first TV timeout, and you know he plays 14, 15 minutes, and Lydon gets the remainder of the minute. If that was the script and Hopkins didn't know to deviate from that script, if Boeheim was on the bench, maybe Coleman would have gotten more minutes leading up to last night's game.
Right.
One thought I had. The other thought I had was, with Tyler Lydon's struggles offensively, you don't, you know, Lydon's active in the, you know, he blocks a lot of shots, but I don't think he rebounds as well as Dewan Coleman does. Last night, Lydon had one rebound. I mean, that's crazy. In 23 minutes, he had one rebound. Dewan Coleman had 7 rebounds. You know, and yeah. If Lydon could struggle offensively, you'd rather have Dewan Coleman out there than Tyler Lydon. You know, Lydon made a couple of great plays, you know, and block shots. He got back on one. I think it was when Marcus Page was going in for a layup and he blocked it out of bounds. And that was a great, great play, great hustle play. But if he's not, if that's all he's bringing, I'm just as comfortable with Dewan Coleman on the court. And I think maybe Boeheim felt the same, and that's why he got to 27 minutes last night. Because, you know, in the previous games, you know, early in the season, you would get more offense out of Tyler Lydon, and that's as much why Dewan Coleman was on the bench. But we're not seeing that anymore.
Yeah, and the, you know, the lack of presence inside was really kind of exasperated last night against North Carolina when Boeheim went with the smaller lineup with Lydon in the middle. So, yeah, we're going to need DC. I don't think he's ready, but I think he's ready to log minutes and ready to battle for rebounds and give some fouls, you know, occasionally, you know, break out for 12 points maybe, which might be all we need there. You know, if he can give us 27 minutes every game and, you know, get somewhere between 5 and 10 rebounds and 5 and 10 points, then I guess we should be ecstatic. Remember, Billy Seelig was once a starting center for this team. So, you know, if Billy Seelig can do it, then I'd hope DC can do it. No offense, Billy Seelig. I guess there is some offense meant.
I think one of the challenges that this team has, among the many, is defensively along that back line. Teams have figured out you can lob against Syracuse very easily, and I don't know if analyzed it quite a bit last night. I thought that they're drawing the wings out so far, then it just leaves either Coleman or Lydon by themselves back there, and they send a big guy, you know, back door coming from the opposite side, and they have a difficult time staying home on that. And that's something this team has to shore up. And I don't know if it's a matter of, you know, keeping Coleman and Lydon in the game together, along with Roberson, and really, really accentuating the back line. But then you end up taking your chances with the teams getting hot from outside too. So
right.
I don't know, it's pick your poison a little bit, but I think defensively, I don't know if Coleman's as proficient in the back of the zone as he needs to be quite yet, only because he probably can't elevate like he needs to be able to defend some of his backdoor cuts and the lobs. Light has done it on occasion, but he's extended out on shooters. So I think there's some miscommunication. I think they're struggling a little bit getting the right rotation still. And that's, you know, that's as much of an issue with this team, I think, as anything. I mean, how many, you know, he gave up 84 points last night. That, yeah, if your 2-3 zone is going to give up 84 points, well, it makes you wonder if that's really, you know, where you want to be spending your energy on this team.
Yeah, and to me, it was just silly. The wings aren't understanding how to play the zone, and we're just getting exploited. Same thing happened against Clemson. The wings extend too far. Nobody was back to recover, and once they get the ball on the baseline, it's a 2-on-1 situation, usually against Tyler Lydon, you know, who actually had some great blocks last night. I mean, love Tyler Lydon. Definitely a bright spot for the future and for the rest of this year. But I get frustrated defensively, kind of moving away from this DC topic for a second, with the fact that you got Trevor Cooney, you know, just totally getting out of position and not able to recover and get out on shooters. Fifth-year senior. This zone, I actually sent out on Twitter last night, and I said I once thought Trevor Cooney would be a more athletic version of Andy Routins. Now I realize I was just an idiot. So yeah, there's – the defense
– pretty true statement, yeah. I would agree with that a lot.
And I think the defense is, you know, a big part of the problem here. It's not shut down. It gets worse as the game goes on. While statistically you might be able to come close to comparing it to some of our better defensive teams over the last 10 years, our better 2-3 zone teams, like the Routins team, which was probably the best, along with Carter Williams' team, that 2-3 zone. But, I don't see it. I think it's terrible. So let's talk about something that's a bright spot, and that would be Malachi Richardson playing like the top recruit that we hoped he would be, having a huge game on a huge stage last night. And my question is, do you think he's the best player on this team? Is still Michael Benajay?
No, I think it's still Michael Benajay. I think the team, especially last night, I think Carolina made a very conscious effort to shut Benajay down and force him into difficult shots, which they did. He's going to have the occasional game like that. He's had two or three like that this year, and it's great to see Richardson and, you know, Cooney as well step into the role when Benajay can't be the guy and be the leader. I think Richardson's done a decent job of creating more well-rounded offensive game, putting the ball on the floor. He did a lot more of that against Clemson, actually, earlier in the week. I was pleased. He attacked the basket a lot in that game. And then it opens up his three-point looks, because I think what you see with Trevor Cooney is, you know, they're always in his face because they know he's not going to think about putting on the floor very much. He does occasionally, but not to the degree where they, you know, where they care enough where they're going to extend on him. I think Richardson, if they feel like he's a threat to attack the basket, he's going to give himself a little space, and he can knock it down if he's got space. I think where we were seeing where he was struggling was he was forcing it, guy in his face, and, you know, he was still launch it up. If he's got a bit more well-rounded offensive game, it gives him a lot more options, and it keeps the defense honest, and I think that's what we're seeing is the effect of that is you know, he's becoming more well-balanced, and he's certainly got the mindset that he wants to be the guy. I certainly think he's talented enough. You know, is he the best player on the team right yet? I don't think. Hey, he's certainly not the best defensive player on the team yet. I know that. He's, in my opinion, kind of a substandard defensive player just because he doesn't always know where to be on the zone. The rotations aren't always sound. Some of the backdoor lob responsibilities are his, and he's missing that. But offensively, he's probably got the most offensive potential of anyone on this team. I would concede that.
Yeah, and again, of course, as just a freshman, I think that Well, a guy like him, who knows if he continues to score at this clip. You know, maybe he slides into the NBA. You never know nowadays. So maybe we don't want him to have that great of a second half so we can have him next year when he really should blossom as a sophomore. But, you know, athletically, I think he really was impressive on a few drives to the basket. We've been saying that he needs to do more of that. He's just been shooting three-pointers at a tremendous clip. And the one guy, and it's really changed a couple weeks ago. You didn't really want him shooting. He was shooting so bad. But now every time he rises up, I think that's going in. And it is at about a 75% clip over the past couple games. That's kind of how he was shooting really early in the season. I felt that way. So, but he is one of those guys, too, that's way kind of out of position in the zone. But he also a pretty good rebounder, you know, for us, which is nice. So.
Yeah. No, he can elevate, so he gets up and gets a lot of rebounds that I don't think, you know, like Devon Coleman can probably get to.
That's right. He probably is a better rebounder than Coleman, you know, even playing out of the three spot. So,
yeah.
Last night, it was Cooney time. It really was for, you know, that one of those rare games where kind of Cooney lights it up and is kind of the story of the game. I wasn't impressed. He did against North Carolina last year, and I was really excited. I thought he turned a corner, and, you know, it was just an aberration. And even last night, with his 27 points, you know, 10 of 21 from the field, which is very good. He made 2 of 2 free throws, although you'd like to think a guy scoring 27 might get to the line a couple more times. 5 of 12 from 3, which is okay. But, you know, in a game where Cooney's like the story, this great shooter Cooney, and he really lit it up, you know, I would like to see something like 7 for 12, 8 for 12, 9 for 12. He missed a lot of open shots. He took a lot of bad shots still. And, you know, he, as a fifth-year senior, towards the end of the game, when Benajay turned it over, instead of following a guy, and, you know, maybe that was the end of the first half. You know the play I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, the announcers even commented.
Bills called him out for it. They said they had a foul to give. It was right the first half. And Bills said they had a foul to give, and he didn't give it. And they, you know, let him get down for a layup, tie the game at halftime.
Seniors aren't supposed to, you know, make those kind of mistakes. But and then, you know, the Clemson game, you know, we haven't talked about that game at all. I was there for that game. Had great seats. And, you know, Cooney had 12 points, 3 of 8 from 3, 43 minutes, you know, it was an overtime game. But what really bothered me about Cooney that game was when Syracuse had the press on late in overtime when they were down, and Cooney made the steal. And at the time he made the steal, we had two guys open underneath the basket for, you know, a simple game-tying basket. And instead he panicked, kind of threw the ball out at midcourt near Michael Benajay, which was probably the worst place you wanted to throw it at that moment. And Benajay made a great play to recover it. So he bailed Cooney out there, I guess. If Cooney had made the right play, it would have been a tie game by that point. And so next thing you know, Cooney finds himself with time running out, with the ball, and a wide open look for three. And he barely hits the rim. He side rims it. It was terrible. The minute it left his hand, you knew it had no shot of going in. And this guy just seems to, you know, he plays more minutes than any player in the history of Syracuse basketball, I think. And I just don't understand why. You can't count on him. You just sit around and wait for him to get hot, which happens rarely. And then another thing is, he'll make one, maybe two free three-pointers or shots in a row, and he's always, like, got this scowl on his face, clapping his hands, like, kind of making it. And, you know, do that after you make four in a row, because I've never, ever in your career seen you make four shots in a row. What do you think?
Yeah. I agree with just about all of it. The thing I was encouraged with last night, you look at the numbers from last night, he shot 21 times in the field. If Trevor couldn't shoot 21 times in the field, you're probably not winning that game. But 12 of those shots were three-pointers, which means 9 of them were two-pointers. So he was 5-9 from 2. I can't remember Syracuse game over the last 4 seasons as he played, that, and I'd be curious if I was wrong, where he shot 9 two-point baskets in a single basketball game. I would bet my house that that hasn't happened. So he was actually putting the ball on the floor a little bit, getting to the basket, getting to the rim. Yeah, he only got 2 free throws. But I think he can be just as good from the mid-range if he's picking a spot. It just doesn't have to be him curling around screens and you know, crouching down, waiting to receive a pass so he can launch a 23-footer. Like, that's been his MO for years. And it was a little bit different last night, and I was pleased with that. You know, 27 points, I agree. That's by no means should we expect that to be the new norm. I think we were lulled into that over the last few seasons. We'd see one or two of those games, and then, he's ready to break out, and it never happens. And so I think we're a bit more jaded about it now, and that's probably a good thing. He'll come out next game and shoot, 3 of 12 and have 11 points. And that's kind of what he's about, which is what we saw against Clemson. But you pointed out something. It has less to do with Trevor Cooney than just this, the team as a whole. But it was a microcosm of this team, and I thought about it last night. And you mentioned it, and it sort of clued me into it. This team seems to only want to look for guys with open three-point chances. Their default look when they've got the ball is to find somebody behind the arc that's open. They don't look under the basket.
Right.
Speaking, that's not their first look ever. And it just seems like they don't really run stuff for the bigs, and they don't really get guys go run into the basket, and they don't do alley-oops or anything. But even on fast breaks, they're more content to look for a guy to kick it out for a three than they are, to try and get a two-on-one and, an alley-oop or, a nice give-and-go on a fast break. Like, those things don't happen with this team. They'll get a one-on-two and then barrel it in and try and get a layup. We talked about that several times over the last few weeks. But it seems like their default is to find somebody for three. And you mentioned Cooney, he gets a steal, he got two guys underneath the basket. But that's not his first look. He doesn't look under the basket. He looks for one of his teammates to launch another three or to kick it to them so he can get it back so he can launch a three. It's a weird mindset on this team, that the three-pointer has so permeated the mindset of this team. That just seems like that's a real focus with their entire offense, regardless of where they receive it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Bam came out and said it preseason. This team is going to shoot tons of threes, and they certainly have. But I was pleased in the first half of that North Carolina game, kind of with the way the offense was flowing. The ball was moving quicker. People were cutting with some purpose. It resulted in a lot of three-point shots still, but at least there was some more, movement and purpose to it all. Our offense in the Clemson game was sick. It was just sick. And I don't get it. It's Clemson. Oh. That game makes me madder than the North Carolina game. Because it's Clemson. We lost to Clemson last year.
You expect to win that game.
We're going to lose to Clemson in the dome. We lose to Clemson in the dome. And in a game that we had won, the Clemson game really upsets me. The North Carolina game was an opportunity to get a nice win for the resume that we let slip through our fingers. But the Clemson game this week was the one that just was disgusted me to the point where, I had trouble sitting in my seat at the dome watching that game. But
I'll tell you though, and it's happened over the last few weeks. It's evolved to this point where they come down the stretch, and I assume they're going to lose. Like I have no confidence in a late game situation with this team.
Yeah,
Syracuse had the chance. Richardson's at the line. He makes one more. I think it was Richardson.
He makes one more.
There, I got a 4-point lead. That game's over.
Game's over.
And I just assume he's going to miss. And I assume they're going to come down and hit a three. I didn't assume they were going to foul and create a difficult situation, put a guy on the line. I assumed that Clemson was going to come down, hit a three, send it to overtime, and Syracuse was going to lose in overtime. I don't know what's happened with this team. 2 years ago, they were 25-0, number one in the country. Right now, I assume they're going to lose those late games. And they do.
Yeah, with about 9 minutes left in the game, Syracuse took a 1-point lead. And I was like, they're probably not going to finish this. This is where it's going to go south. And it sure did, in a major way, to the point where we find ourselves, you know, 9 points down just minutes later. So with all that we've seen of this team so far, the good, the bad, and the ugly, more recently mostly ugly, but give them a little pass because of the difficulties that they've had to deal with the coaching staff and Boeheim and the NCAA. But what is the ceiling for this team? What's the best that we can hope for this year? Can we even, in our wildest dreams, hope for a Final Four? What do you think?
No, God, no. No, 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 no. That should be the last time you utter the words Final Four on this program this season.
I'm talking best case scenario, though. Our ceiling, our best. If let's say that from here on out, everything goes the way that we hope it will. Boeheim writes it. Benny J starts playing like an All-American again. And, you know, what do you even in that situation, we cannot think Final Four.
No, they don't have a point guard. They have a three playing point guard. You can't go to Final Four without a true point guard. Name me the last team that did. There's no way.
Yeah,
they got some nice pieces, but they don't. They also play six guys. And how many teams that play six guys go to the Final Four? No way.
No, just yeah. Even our Final Four teams, we went a little deeper than this one. Bam's going with this one. And
hey, you can't play Caleb Joseph 2 minutes and Frank Howard 5 minutes and go to the Final Four. It's not going to happen. There's too many good teams out there. There's too much talent in college basketball across the country. And believe me, the starting five or the starting six, I guess you can call it, that Syracuse rolls out is not better than the starting five or six of any of the top 25 teams currently in the top 25. I don't see it. I've watched some college basketball. I don't see this five being any better.
Yeah, I agree with it. I agree with it. Well, Brad, we were talking before the show, you know, you're from Xavier country, and there's a school that's top 10 team in the country right now, and they're Xavier. We're Syracuse, and, you know, you were talking about their depth and the way they approach it and the talent they bring in.
Yeah. So last weekend they played Butler. You know, Butler's a top 10 team. Xavier was a top 10, is a top 10 team. Butler was top 10 at the time. I think they dropped down to 15 or so. And so Xavier University, a little small Catholic school in Cincinnati, is playing a top 10 team, and they roll out nine guys playing meaningful minutes in that game. So you're telling me that Xavier University can recruit enough talented basketball players to play meaningful minutes against a top 10 team, but Syracuse University, with one national championship and five Final Fours,
and the Carrier Dome, Jim Boeheim,
one in the history of this college basketball, cannot do that? Like, I'm confused by that. And I get the fact that, you know, Tyler Ennis went pro early and Chris McCullough went pro early and we didn't get him to stop at the Agne, and I get those things. But you're telling me that they still can't roll out enough guys, enough talented guys to play meaningful minutes against a Clemson?
Yeah.
Let alone a top 10 team. Yeah. You know, I don't get that. And that's philosophical as much as it is just dumb luck in recruiting. Like, that's philosophical. And I'm telling you that this, and I'm gonna harp on it again. I mean, the tight rotation, that's a choice that they make. They can send out Caleb Joseph for more than 2 minutes. He's going to make mistakes, yes. They can send out
Howard,
Aboko. For more than 3 or 4 minutes. Howard played 5 minutes. He was out for the Clemson game, unfortunately, and one or two prior. But those guys can play more than 10 minutes. You know, you give Cooney some spells, you give Benajay some spells, because you're going to need them in the late game. That's why this team is losing late games. This team crumbles at the end of games. Saw it last night, saw it against Clemson, saw it the last several games prior to that. This team loses in late game. They're fatigued. They're tired. Yeah, they're college kids. Whatever. It's a grind, man. I told you. I've been telling you that, and I'll continue to tell you that.
Yep.
These guys are worn down by the time the game's over because they're playing 37, 38 minutes, and they've got nothing left in the tank when you get into 2 or 3 minutes left in the game. It just happens. They're humans. They're gonna wear it down.
Yeah, and you know,
guys, Jim, it's not gonna happen.
You tell me that the eighth or ninth best player that Syracuse recruits and has on their roster, probably as a general rule of thumb, should be about as good as, you know, a starter on Butler or Xavier.
But you don't think Xavier wouldn't mind Chinoto Aboko as a big on their team? You don't think they'd find an opportunity to give him
to develop him? Yeah, to develop him and get him the minutes.
Yeah, you'd have to spend time with him, right? You don't just focus on your five guys and work on 2-3 zone for, you know, 3 hours a day.
So when you really need him,
kids and make them productive players in Division I basketball.
So he's ready to go, you know, when you need him. And Boko's not ready to go when we need him because he wasn't.
But he didn't play. He didn't play more than a couple of minutes against Cornell.
Right.
Against Montana State. Like these are games he should have gotten productive time in to get him ready for the season. When you need him, he didn't play him then. He's a waste of you.
Especially, especially given the fact that we're so thin inside, you should have prepared for a Boko to be able to fill that space and play grid defense in the zone and get rebounds, because it would be inevitable. The one, you know, unless you want to go with a lineup that includes Joseph, Howard, Benajay, Richardson, and Roberson, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. I agree with you. Totally ridiculous. And I don't know if it's going to get better because coming up, it could get very bad. Boston College is coming to the Dome. And after that, get lost to Clemson, I'm not guaranteeing any wins over Boston College, and that's kind of sickening. And then at Wake Forest, another potential loss in a game that normally...
Wake's a good team this year.
And then of course, at Duke, which probably will come with less fanfare this year, but it will be a big Monday game. But we're going to get thrash probably unless somehow Benajay is inspired, you know, after transferring. But what'll happen is they might keep it close and then just fade at the end like always. And I can guarantee you another thing, they will not call that game in Duke like they called the game in the Dome last night. First half, they really let them play. It was great. Syracuse will find themselves in foul trouble in that Duke game. So, hey, Brad.
Syracuse cannot afford to be in foul trouble, obviously, with as light a bench as they have.
Yeah, it's like a catch 42-22. It's a big mess. Well, we're running out of time here. We got Connor's Corner Trivia coming up next. It's a little short version this week, but nonetheless, one of our favorite parts of the show and a time when we can kind of maybe forget about what's happening on the court now. So, Brad, what do you got for us this week?
Yeah, I didn't spend a whole lot of time. I watched a horrific late-game collapse last night. Got home at 1 in the morning, watched another late-game collapse at 7 o'clock this morning before we talked, and so I didn't have much time to put something together. But I've been thinking about it a little bit over the last couple of days. The Carolina game, they did quite a bit better with this, but this is not a very good free throw shooting team. They were 10 of 12 last night, but for the season, this team is shooting 67% from the free throw line, which, based on the current NCAA statistics, will place them 217th in the country. That's not very good for a team that considers themselves one of the elites.
Yeah.
Got me thinking about free throw percentage. See how many of the top 10 you can name of the top free throw shooters over the course of their career in the Jim Boeheim era.
Let's go with Jerry McNamara.
Yes, Jerry McNamara is first on the list. He shot at 89% over the course of his career.
Let's go with, this might be tough. Great free throw shooters for Syracuse. Wow. Is there any minimum, like attempts or?
Yeah, I guess there would be, but any guy you're going to come up with is going to be within the minimum, I think.
Okay. What about Marius Giannoulis?
That's a good call. He's second on the list. He shot 81% over the course of his career. He's sixth on the all-time Syracuse list, but second in the Boeheim era. He shot it better before Boeheim, apparently.
Right. What about the Pearl?
Pearl is not on this list.
But Sherman Douglas is, I bet.
Pearl is 43rd on the career list, shot at 73%, but yeah, he's pretty low. Even in the Boeheim era, he's probably not better than 25th or 30th.
What about Sherm, the general?
Sherm Douglas is also not on the list. He's way down. He's 64th career this year at Syracuse, which probably puts him in the 40 to 50 range in the Boeheim era. 69% of his career for Sherm Douglas.
Is Cooney getting up there close? I mean, is he like, I would think he's about 14th if I had to guess.
Darkoni is 7th on the list of Bayheim era free throw shooters at 79%.
Well, good for him.
Going into the season.
You know, that's the thing about him. You know, you can, for all the times that, you know, I want to just bury Cooney, you can, somebody else can always make an argument that, you know, he's one of the great players. I think, I don't agree with it, but, you know, when you cite he's a top 10 all-time Syracuse free throw shooter, you know, in the Bayheim era, it's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Because I seem to remember him only making one of two in every important situation that we ever have at the line.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because that is the way I think of him. But and the other thing about it is he doesn't get to line very much because he doesn't get fouled very much, because he doesn't attack the basket very much, because he just stands out behind the three-point line most of the time. But when he does, he converts it. But you're right, in big situations, he hasn't always been there for us.
What about Brandon Trish?
Trish, not a bad guess. He's 31st. On the total, on the Syracuse history list, which probably puts him in the 20 to 25 range. Hmm. Era.
Andy Routins? Andy or Leo Routins, either one.
Well, funny. Yeah, so Leo is just outside the list. He's 12th in the Bayheim era. Leo is 77% free throw shooter. Andy is two spots below. Leo on the Bayheim era list at 76%. So Leo is a slightly better shooter. Leo is 76.7. Andy was 76.3. So that's probably a discussion they have at the Thanksgiving dinner table.
What about, I'm going to throw a couple names at you, Eric Diemendorf and Demetrius Nichols.
Diemendorf's a good call. Diemendorf is 5th on the all-time Bayheim era list. At almost 80%, 79.5. That's a good call, because he's a very good free throw shooter and a clutch free throw shooter too. The other one you said was who? I'm sorry.
Demetrius Nichols.
Demetrius Nichols. He's 25th or 29th on the all time.
Oh wow! I thought I heard one there.
List, which puts him probably 20th in the Bayheim era at 75%.
I thought I might have had one there.
So not bad. Not bad, but not one of the elites.
Right. Oh, what about Lawrence Moten or Preston Shumpert?
Preston Shumpert is a good call. He's 6th on the all-time Bayheim era list at 79%. And the other one you said was Lawrence Moten. Lawrence Moten is 50th on the...
Oh, not even close, man.
On the combined list. So that probably puts him 35th to 40th on the Bayheim era list. 71% for Lawrence Moten.
So how many do I have left to get here?
You got McNamara, you got your new list. 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 5. You got 5, and you're missing 5 on the top 10.
Man, this is hard. I bet you there's some Cuse fans out there that are not impressed with my trivia ability that probably have this whole top 10 hammered out. But
yeah, some of you be surprised. Some are a bit obscure, but.
What about Jason Sapola?
Not a bad guess, actually. He's 25th all-time at Syracuse, 76%. Probably puts him 15 to 20 in the behind there. I'll tell you what, for the sake of time, because I know we're got a tight show today. I'll give you the other 5.
Oh, let me just Adrian Autry.
Red Autry is not on this list. He's on the top 33rd on the all-time Syracuse list, with 25th-ish behind there. 75% for Adrian Autry, senior.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of tapped out. Unless, you know, what I'm really probably missing is going back to the Tony Red Bruin or Gene Waldron days. You know, some guys I'm probably missing from there. Louis Orr.
Red Bruin, 51st on the list.
Yeah.
Gene Waldron's 48th on the list. Louis Orr is just outside the top 10 Bayheim era. He's 11th at a 77% clip. That was a pretty good guess. But a couple of guys.
Matt Rowe?
I'll start. Matt Rowe? Matt Rowe should be on this list.
couldn't he? Matt Rowe is an excellent shooter. He's 54th.
Oh, geez.
In the history of Syracuse, 71%.
What about?
A great shooter. I'm surprised he couldn't be higher.
Rafael Addison or Wendell Alexis?
Wendell Alexis is a good call.
I remember he's a good free throw shooter.
He's right behind Trevor Cooney, so he's seventh on the all-time list.
All right. Well, for the sake of time, I'm going to stop throwing out random names that I think might be good free throw shooters and let you give them the rest.
So you mentioned Jerry McNamara. He was first. Second was Mary Sinulis. You mentioned him. Third on the Bayheimera list at 81% was Marty Head.
Oh, man. I definitely should have got Marty Head.
Right. He was a very, very solid shooter.
Easy to remember because he was bald and his name was Marty Head.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Fourth on the list, Danny Shays at 81%.
Oh, wow, yeah. I didn't remember him as a great free throw shooter, but apparently he was.
Yeah.
All-time greats.
That's what you want. You want your big men to be able to shoot free throws. He was one of the best. You mentioned Devendorf.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Preston Shumpert, Cooney, Wendell Alexis. Last two on this list, Johnny Flynn, 78%.
Oh, wow. Should have got that one, huh?
Yeah, 78.2. And then number 10 on the list in only one season, Wes Johnson, 77%.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, that's great trivia as usual, Brad. I don't know how you come up with them each week, but let's quickly move on to...
courtesy of orangehoops.org, one of the best sites for Syracuse fans that are out there.
Absolutely agree with you there. I love that guy. Orangehoops.org is a tremendous resource. For any Syracuse fan, you could get lost for days on that site.
Absolutely. I have.
So quickly, two for the road. Is the Carrier Dome the best big game atmosphere in college basketball? Because even with just 26-8 in the Dome last night, Boeheim's return, North Carolina coming in, it was awesome just to see that scene. And I got tons of texts from people that were at the game that were like, this is awesome. The Dome is awesome. What do you think? Best big game atmosphere in the country?
So I've got two thoughts on this. Number one, disappointed that there were only 26,000 there last night.
I agree. Students.
Jim Boeheim,
no students, though.
Or probably the best home game they're going to have all season on a Saturday night.
Yep.
I mean, we're accustomed to 30,000 for big games. If that's all that they could muster, and this is probably the biggest game. It's a reflection of, you know, kind of the
apathy
sentiment on this team.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. Students were out, though.
So, yeah, sir. You know, but we've seen 30,000 without students before, too.
Sure.
I think we've been spoiled a little bit by the 30,000 crowds, but I would have liked to have seen more. I mean, it was a great atmosphere, and I don't disagree that it's a great, great atmosphere when the Dome's full. It's a lot better than the last couple of games when they could barely even sell behind the backboard up in the upper level. So that was it was a better atmosphere last night. Best big game atmosphere in college basketball. I don't know, Jim, if you happen to watch the Kansas-Oklahoma game on Monday night at Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
That's a big game atmosphere right there, boy. Number one and number two. That's what I would love. I mean, we would see those when Syracuse was one, and, you get a Georgetown team coming in at number two.
Yeah, or even when Duke came to the Dome for the first time. Yeah, I agree. It's a lot. It depends. But when that happens, that it's the best big game atmosphere in the country. I think it's better than Allen Fieldhouse, only because there's more people. The ability for the people that come to the games to just co-mingle in the concourses and in the backcourt before the game, and there's just a lot going on. The Sour Citrus Society, the Orange Band, the best in the country, and of course I'm a little partial, but.
Yeah, and we haven't seen too many games in some of these other arenas too. I mean, everything I've heard of Allen Fieldhouse is there's no better, and that even includes Cameron Indoor. And I think the thing about those arenas, it's just a different style, right? I mean, in those stadiums, it feels like the crowd's kind of right on you.
Right.
In the Dome, it will never feel that way, just because it's cavernous, but it's as loud as any. There's a different feel to it, and the depth perception is different just because it's a massive place, and you see 30,000 Orange fans in there. It's mind blowing to see that many people in one building to watch a basketball game. But you get a fan, a crowd in Cameron, you get a crowd in Allen Fieldhouse. I think those are the only two that would probably rival it in my mind. And Kentucky fans would go screaming and say Rupp Arena is better. I view Rupp Arena in the same way that I view the Dean Dome.
Yeah,
they're nice atmospheres. The crowd's very partial. but I never view them as crazy. I never view them as out of control. I never view them as a place where it's impossible for a home team to win because the crowd just won't allow for it.
Yeah.
I do see that in the Dome occasionally, and I do see that in Kansas and at Duke.
Okay. Really quickly, without much explanation here, let's get our predictions for this week. I'll give you mine first. BC win. We're going to win. Wake Forest probably lost, but that Wake game could be a turning point for this team. If we can get two wins this week, that could be a turning point for this team. What do you think is going to happen?
Bam. Beat BC, lose at Wake.
And you know that you know it's bad when I'm sure. You know it's bad when I'm predicting a loss to one of the middle tier ACC teams. Even on the road. But hey, Brad, thanks for joining me. I'm going to take us out of here, and we'll be back next Sunday. Check your local listing, subscribe to the show. And Brad, thanks for getting up early, watching that game, and joining me this morning.
It was fun, Jim. We'll do it again next week.
All right. So we'll be back again next Sunday with another edition of the Upstate Orange Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed at iTunes, Stitcher.com, YouTube, or via RSS. We're online at fingerlakes1.tv/UpstateOrange. For the Professor Brad Connor, I'm Jim Sinacropi. Have a great week, and let's go Orange.